From Stamford to Stratford, from Westport to Wilton, Fairfield County listens to the Lisa Wexler Show on WICC 600.
And welcome back. State Senator Tony Wong of our own region here in the WICC listening area joining us right now. Senator Wong, you have been so busy on Saturday morning. First of all, my apologies. I really wanted to, even as a judge, I shouldn't say that. As a judge, I have to stay away from wall rallies of any kind. But you had my oomph behind you. And besides, I was cooking a lot of chicken soup. Tell me about Saturday morning. What was it about? And I know Senator Blumenthal was there with you. And just talk about what you were doing. And Jessup Green.
Well, first and foremost, happy Passover to you, your family, and all your loved ones. It's a special celebration and a recognition of the unique contributions and culture of the Jewish faith in our community. And really, that's a great segue to what the outpouring came on Saturday morning in Jessup Green in Westport, where over 100 plus people came, from students to adults to grandparents, that came out and spoke and shared experiences, talking about anti-Asian hate movement and raising awareness, not only for the rash of the hate and violence that we saw in Atlanta and various other parts of this country as a result of our past presidents' use of the word and identifying one group for this horrible COVID pandemic. And what came out of it wasn't just addressing the outward violence, Lisa, but you heard people talk about the subtleties, the bias, the prejudice, and the stereotypes that people endure in silence, and how it builds up and hurts just as deeply as a physical violence and physical taunt and prejudice. And you saw these students talk from emotion, the words, the insinuations, the biases that are built in, that are fed by our media, by our entertainment, by every facet of our culture, that reinforces a model minority perception, and that the stereotypes that happen to past generations, right? The Jewish community, when we first immigrated, the Irish community, the African American, the Latino community, gender, LGBTQ, disability. It really was an important introspect to say that bias, hate, and prejudice exist in all of us. And it is an opportunity to not just point out the physical hate and violence that we've seen, but also to look in our hearts and say, what are our biases? And to be honest with them and explore them, because they hurt just as bad from a standpoint of built up and resentment and frustration for people.
Yeah, there's no question. Look. And you know, we're it's a very tumultuous time right now, Senator Wong. In other words, there's definitely a big shift. I mean, the trial for Derek Chauvin is going to be starting this week, and you know, let's not forget George Floyd and the Black Lives Matter, which was a cataclysmic kind of, you know, wake up call, I think, for a lot of people in America. And you know, and then we did have the Trump presidency and all of that stuff that was sort of came out from under rocks with a very much emboldened white supremacy movement and the white supremacists that led the insurrection on January 6th. I mean, it's been really tough. And yet at the same time as these currents are happening and people of goodwill and enlightenment and just basically decency are trying to have us overcome our prejudices. At the same time, you have a little bit of a clash with that, Senator Wong, of some people feeling like they have to watch everything they say a little bit to be on eggshells, that, you know, we've gotten to a culture where we're afraid to offend people too much and even laughing at ourselves sometimes. We're just living in a time where you're right. We obviously, I mean, to me, it's very obvious. We have to get rid of any kind of hate on the basis of any stereotype. And at the same time, I think we also have to relax and laugh a little bit at ourselves and our foibles and even our generalities of culture.
I couldn't agree with that more, Lisa, you said it so beautifully, because it's important. And the way we do that is to engage with people, learn from people.
That's right.
You know, my family had a Chinese restaurant, and I learned so much about the Jewish faith. And
naturally,
part of it was because
naturally,
we were the only
because
place
we love
open.
Chinese food.
You know,
of course.
We were the only place right? open in during Easter and Christmas.
Christmas, that's right.
And you know, so you learn and appreciate, and that's how I got engaged. And for me, as an immigrant that loved this country and being exposed and grew up in a martial law environment. That's why public service is so important for me, because we live in the greatest country to have all these things. Unless you yes. have the diversity of experience, the opportunity to realize that we may not think the same way or go through the same experience, and that we may be naive in some aspects, that we are open to these engagements. And I think you talked about it so well, is people are on pins and needles. And, mm-hmm. and worry about saying the wrong thing and the right things. And what the reality is, there may be people who said the wrong thing, but they come from it from a standpoint of, I didn't know. And it's an mm-hmm. opportunity for education. That's why I, in a bipartisan way, are supporting a legislation to have Asian Pacific American Pacific Islander studies included into our program, so that people can mm-hmm. learn about the bias against Asian Americans in the Japanese internment, the exclusionary.
Well, it was stunning, because speaking of a segue, it was in a zoning hearing or a housing hearing of some kind that you were having with Kim Fiorello and some others, where, and I forgot his name, but another, this was a Democratic person from an officer from a legislator from another part of the state. He made a statement denying any prejudice against Asian Americans, and the ignorance was dumbfounding. It was astounding.
And what I looked at that was two parts, Lisa, was one, that everyone else in the committee, other than Kimberly Fiorello, who is Korean American, and myself, Chinese American, felt there was a need to call out this kind of thinking. I think that was one of the teaching moments that we should mm-hmm. have, is
good.
That when bigotry, bias, and prejudice are articulated, we should speak out, and we should use it as a teaching moment. And that's
well,
the
not
way
just
I
that, just
it.
Ignorance too, and just ignorance.
Absolutely.
Anybody who doesn't know, anybody who doesn't know, the first, just for my audience, the very first exclusionary immigration law was against Chinese people in this country. And it
Absolutely.
Was a whopper. And it stayed on the books for many, many, many decades.
Absolutely.
That was numero uno whopper. And then Korematsu versus United States was one of the lowest, probably that, along with Plessy versus Ferguson, the two lowest ever, you know, Supreme Court jurisprudence cases, where the Supreme Court actually okayed FDR's rounding up of Japanese Americans in internment camps during World War II. Did not do that for German Americans. If we had done it for German Americans, we would have had virtually nobody fighting in our armies overseas. But he did it against Japanese Americans. And the
Absolutely.
Japanese American, and you know what, Senator Wong? What was so remarkable is that the Japanese Americans, the way they took it, in other words, they took it. They accepted it. They took it. They really didn't fight back against it. They really didn't make a lot of, frankly, noise about it, you know, in an ugly, aggressive way. And it was just sad and awful and pathetic that this is what we did as a country.
They accepted it, but they were hurt. But
sure.
The ultimate goal for them was they saw themselves as Americans. That is why they supported and supported the government. There are many Japanese Americans who continue to fight on behalf of America. But that's the challenge, right, Lisa? We need to have more of these conversations and to have that dialogue. And that's what my hope was, that the program on Saturday gave people a different look, that not only is it the physical hate and violence, but for generations of Asian Pacific Americans, because we look different. that the hurt exists because of the perceptions and the subtleties. That the perception of the model minority may be very well a nomenclature in our culture, but it comes with a label. It comes with a perception. And that just isn't the case. And I go back to Martin Luther King that I hope and pray that we get to a day where our children and their children will be judged by the content of their character and ability rather than by the color of their skin.
So let me ask you something, Senator Wong, because you've been vocal in some of your opposition to a lot of these laws that are intended to give state control over local zoning to the state. How does your background and your take on minorities and on their place in American society, tell me how that fits in with your feeling about local control versus state control for the goal of having more affordable housing?
I appreciate that example because it is important. You are bound and formed by your experiences. And for me, here was an Asian American immigrant, first generation, came to the United States when I was 9 years old, Lisa, and spent the first 3 years in this country as a family for the first time in nearly 8 years in a federal housing project. We lived together. We had a housing that supported us to be able to be a family and a warm roof over our head in cold winters. And I had a great opportunity for education. I started in English as a second language. I couldn't speak the language to this day. English is still my second language. But I had great teachers and a great opportunity to succeed. And that's what America seems to me. It is
well, you're also very smart.
Aspiration.
You must have also been very smart.
You know
had to have been very smart because you don't even speak. You speak without the trace of an accent. I mean, my grandmother came here, not that she wasn't smart, but she came here at the age of 12. And I will tell you that, you know, she lived to 106 and a half, but, you know, she spoke English with a very, very thick accent. I don't even hear the trace of an accent from you. You must be very adept at languages. You're very
smart. Well, I was fortunate at an age of linguistic, but I had great teachers, Lisa. Mm-hmm. I had people who supported me, and I was able to succeed and learn the language and still retain my Chinese speaking. But what's important is, we do have a critical need in this state of Connecticut for accessible, affordable, and diverse housing, period. We need it. We needed it yesterday. We need to make a move to address that issue. But we need to address that issue not only in our suburbs, but also in our urban settings and in our rural settings. And the solution has to be the collaboration between neighborhoods, local, state, and federal working together. The idea right now of the bills that are being proposed that remove by statute of has of right, which translated is that the state's regulatory guidelines will remove the requirement for public hearings and public input.
Unbelievable.
In zoning proposals.
It's unbelievable.
The one size fits all of the state knowing better to address the critical need for housing is, I think, misdirected. And the idea that any town that looks to have any input is potentially discriminatory and exclusionary. I will share with you, when we first looked at homes, we looked and looked different communities in southwestern Connecticut. This was nearly 35, 40 years ago. And we looked, and were there exclusionary practices? Absolutely. Were we subject to some of it? Potentially. But nevertheless, 2021, in the hearts of people, do we still believe that they're biased, prejudice, and discrimination? Absolutely. But I will say this, in any town in Connecticut, should those be apparent and implemented against any minority or protected groups, there would be hell to be paid. So how do we change the structural challenges of prohibitive land cost and potential developers that look to not only make huge margins using A30G to create high density that are ill-formed in the general concept of height, elevation, and structure and character of the community. We have opened the door where A30G as a statute, well-intentioned over 30 years ago, has not solved the problem. So if we're looking to address the challenge of the need for diverse housing, we may have to explore all the parameters. But whatever parameter we choose, and this is the crux of my frustration with the current zoning laws, it is the state saying they know better, and instead of working and collaborating with a carrot, they're using a very big hammer and say, you haven't done it, you've been a bad actor, and we're going to make you do it. And it
well, also, you just have to follow the money. You also have to follow the money, Senator Wong. The only people that really benefit from this are the real estate developers. Since when is that liberal, good, democratic policy? I don't even understand it. It's not looking at the environment. It's not giving local conservation commissions their due. Matt Mandel came on and said even local police can't even issue traffic kind of studies or safety and security about proposed development. I don't even understand how this is in keeping with what liberal Democrats feel is good policy. I don't even understand it.
Not to mention the environmental impact for many of our coastal towns. From a density and increasing sewer and septic capacity to, in order to accommodate the density. That's why it's troubling that the well-intentioned, noble idea of greater diversity, greater accessibility in housing is one that is shared by everyone. And a lot of environmental advocates share those values, but they're being persuaded that these kind of proposals are acceptable and they've been signed on to support it when they don't fully realize some of the open space, watershed protection areas, environmental concerns of density building is going to tremendously and irreparably damage our environment. So there are many things, but I can leave you on a positive note, Lisa.
Go ahead.
We are in the Planning and Development Committee exploring these bills. We're going to have to vote on these bills to pass it out of the Committee of Cognizance in Planning and Development this Wednesday. And it is still a work in progress. That's the commitment I've gotten from leadership, the Democratic leadership, to say we're hearing the people, and I hope they do, and that as we vote the bill with a work in progress, I will vote no in order that we still come to the table. I truly believe for us to be able to make a move forward, to address the need that we all agree exists, but to have those considerations that you just talked about, incorporated into the final language, I really like for us to get to an agreement and respecting local input, collaboration, and addressing the problem of opportunity for everyone. That is the promise and the possibility that as we work forward, there's still the opportunity for us when we sit together, collaborate. During the Passover, it's inappropriate to break bread and get to understand the challenges on all sides. Maybe we can find a solution to move us forward on housing and zoning and land use in this upcoming session. I can only
hope one other thing. All right, but Senator Wong, before I let you go, I have to make one other plea with you. So Eversource, this is incredible to me. You know, Eversource took the Isaias situation, which was a disaster, and we all know it was a disaster. And they got slapped on the wrist by the legislature, and now if, you know, they go 96 hours without power, they have to pay a fine. And they took this opportunity as an opportunity to say, okay, we're now going to cut down trees for 4,200 miles throughout Connecticut, many of them in your district. And they're spending $76 million, frankly, of our money, and they're going to be whacking trees like mad. I've already had people call in such distress in Weston because they've taken away vistas and sight lines and cut down perfectly healthy trees. Not a branch or two that was entangled in a line, but the entire trunk. And you're our state senator, and I'm pleading with you to make a phone call, to do whatever it is you can do in committee or with others, because It's going to be really painful for people in Connecticut. Everybody needs to look outside and see if any trees are entangled with any lines and hire a tree man now to get it out of the way of the Eversource bucket trucks. But they're coming for us. They're coming for 4,200 miles of trees. And I'm angry because they're doing this in a way for spite. Because what they could have done is they could have embarked on a capital project to start making a lot of these lines underground. They could have taken the $76 million and taken at least 76 miles and put that underground. Instead, they just want to whack the trees. The trees are going to grow back. It's a short-term solution to a long-term problem.
I hear you loud and clear, and I have already called out Eversource and UI. I have already spoken to the chairs of the Energy and Technology Committee that has oversight. I have also reached out to the Public Utilities Regulatory Authority. Chairwoman Gillette has
she's coming on a show in a couple weeks.
And I will share with you, the other part of this is consistent. The fact that they are taking down trees on private property, on municipal property, under using this kind of a fiat clearing is, again, an overrun of authority that's been granted to them for the kind of public safety considerations of wire protection. But they've kind of gone and say, we're going to do a blanket cut, which is unconscionable. And this is one where we should stand united. And that's important when you talk about issues that affect communities and people's properties and local input. There is no Democrat Republican to this. It's all about your community. And I can tell you, I have made it clear that this violation of people's personal property rights and our woodlands and trees that frame the beautiful geography that we have has to be measured and respecting personal property rights. And they have not done that. And I'm deeply offended by that. And, of course, the utilities continue with their arrogance that they seem more interested in Wall Street than Main Street.
Tony Wong, thank you so much for representing us. It's the 28th, right? Is it the 28th?
Yes, ma'am.
It's the 28th District, Senator Tony Wong, and thank you for everything you're doing. And I do appreciate that you were on Jessup Green in Westport on Saturday morning. And thank you for just all the awareness you bring to everything. And a happy Easter to you and your family. And thank you very much for being on the show today.
Thanks, Lisa. And you know, I'll end by this. We all know, in your role as well, what a great privilege and honor we have to be in a public service role on behalf of our residents and our community. It is a great privilege that we have, and I thank you for your service as well.
Thank you very much, Senator Tony Wong. We'll be right back. We're going to chat with Brian Alexander. His book is called The Hospital, and he took a really drill-down look into the mechanism of a small-town hospital and how that teaches us larger lessons about our own healthcare system in America. We'll be right back.